morning, everyone. The first case on calendar today is Anderson versus State Employment Security Division, case number 59152. Mr. Olson, are you ready to proceed?
I am.
You wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Well, please, the court. My name is David Olshan. I work for Nevada Legal Services, and I represent the appellant, Ricky Anderson. The issue in this case, in a nutshell, is whether NRS 612.844 allows for more than one period of disability. It's our position on appeal that it does, and when the court scheduled this in-bank hearing, they asked us to address two specific questions. The first question is, if an injury has two periods of disability under NRS 612.344, does a three-year limitations period run from the first period or the later period? It's our position that it would be the later period. Again, what we're arguing here is that there's more than one period of disability under 612.344. The second question the court asked was whether the cause of the injury's relapse determines the initial period of disability, which starts the three-year limitations period. The answer is no. It's not the medical determination, it's not the cause of the injury's relapse. What we're arguing on appeal is that we're looking at substantial gainful activity. So it's under Social Security law, claimant has worked. Substantial gainful activity would disqualify you for, would negate a disability under Social Security law. That's the standard that we're arguing. If you work 6 months, more than 6 months, and earn, in this case, $1,010 each month for more than 6 months, Social Security law would find that you were not disabled anymore. So if that's the case, if you're not disabled, then you would be eligible for another period of disability under 612.344.
But the Social Security Act and regulations don't have the same word initial period of disability, do they?
No.
So the statutory construction issue is more problematic in your case?
Yes, I would acknowledge that, yes. I mean, a plain reading of the statute would clearly favor the respondents in this case, that we're talking about an initial period of disability. And what the claimant, what Mr. Anderson admitted at his hearing was that this was the same injury. And again, that plain reading would disqualify him from receiving unemployment benefits. What we're arguing basically is the remedial nature of NRS Chapter 612. The essence here is that under 612, you're going to provide temporary assistance to workers who become involuntarily unemployed.
So, Mr. Olson, you don't view the statute as ambiguous?
The statute is unclear.
Is it ambiguous?
It's not
in the legal sense.
It's not ambiguous.
Okay, thank you.
And that's basically the straightforward reading would say that Mr. Anderson's not eligible because this was the same injury and this is the initial period of disability. But the remedial nature of unemployment laws, Chapter 612, would require a court to look beyond that, to look beyond to see if there was an additional area where we could cover Mr. Anderson and make him eligible for unemployment benefits. The remedial nature of NRS Chapter 612 is what we're referring to. We're also talking about a common sense notion that if you are injured, as Mr. Anderson was, he was injured in 2004, he was on workers' comp, he got off workers' comp in 2006, worked from March 2006 to October 2008. In November 2008, he was back.
During that time period, he was paying into the unemployment compensation correct?
That's correct. That's correct. So he worked 2.5 years. He was earning more than $1,010 a month for those 2.5 years. He went back on workers' comp after workers' comp ended in 2010. He applied for unemployment benefits. He tried to elect an alternative base period, and employment security said no. The injury occurred in 2004, and the three-year statute of limitations had run. So that's what we're arguing, that because of that middle period, because of that 2.5 years that he worked, he was eligible for another period of disability. I think also that the standard that the Employment Security Division has taken could lead to an absurd or unreasonable result where you could get injured early in your career. Let's say you're injured at age 20, you go on workers' comp, then you go back to work, you work 20 years. Under the current holding, you wouldn't be able to elect a different base period. You would be stuck with the base period at 20 years ago based on that injury that occurred 20 years ago. That's basically the argument in a nutshell, is that the plain reading of the statute does talk about initial period of disability. Mr. Anderson did admit at his hearing that this was the original injury. The C5 and C6 vertebrae in his back. It was re-injured in 2008. He went back on disability. We're asking for the court to look beyond the statute, to look beyond the plain reading of the statute, to understand the remedial nature of NRS Chapter 612, and to potentially look at the absurd result of somebody working 20 years, working a great length of time, and not being covered under the unemployment, under NRS Chapter 612.
Explain to me that if the statute's not ambiguous, you said it's unclear, but it's not ambiguous in answering Justice Hardesty's question, how do we look beyond the statute then? In statutory interpretation, if it's ambiguous, we can look at legislative history and things like that, but how, you're saying the word remedial. You have to explain that a little better to me so I can understand what you're talking about.
Well, the plain reading of the statute does say initial period of disability. And we're saying that this could involve a possibility of allowing for more than one period of disability. And that, the inclination to do that, the inclination to go into whether there's a different period of disability would be based on the remedial nature of NRS 612, the inclination to try to find someone eligible for benefits to cover a worker that's involuntarily unemployed.
What's the difference between unclear and ambiguous in your thinking? When you say something's unclear but it's not ambiguous, how do we do that as a court? How do we do analytics to that? When you say are you saying that we cannot look at legislative history or really what the purpose of unemployment compensation is?
I guess we would argue that a court, in its discretion, could find something that's unclear and possibly ambiguous. At the same time, this language itself, a common sense view, could look at it as something that's clear. And I think that if you're using this statute in a way, in the workers' comp law, let's say, in the contractual basis between the employer and the employee, that a plain reading where you don't favor either side could be that Mr. Anderson is not eligible.
But if we strictly construed these statutes as it reads, doesn't that undermine your argument?
It does, yes.
Yes.
If there are no further questions, I'll conclude by asking the court to reverse the district court and find my client eligible for unemployment.
Thank you. You have 6 minutes and 28 seconds of rebuttal.
Jay Thomas Susich, I'm the attorney for the Nevada Employment Security Division. Mr. Walshan's argument really flies in the face of this court's long history of precedential decisions regarding the application of unemployment insurance statutory law in the, its implementation by the Employment Security Division. In Kane versus Employment Security Division, this court specifically stated that there is no inherent right to unemployment insurance benefits, that they are creatures of statute, and that the legislature has the authority to create non-discriminatory laws that affect the eligibility and the procedure that must be followed with regard to the payment of unemployment insurance. So therefore, to do as Mr. Olshan argues, this court would in essence have to sit as a super legislature and decide to change the law in order to comply with what it may believe is a more equitable application of the unemployment insurance system.
Isn't that his argument about the remedial nature of the unemployment benefits statutes?
I'm sorry,
the remedial nature of these statutes themselves.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, and I can say that from my research, there is no requirement within the Department of Labor regulations that requires any state to provide for an alternative base period for persons that are disabled. This is a creature of the Nevada legislature that was created by the legislature for a specific purpose. And that specific purpose was to provide individuals who were initially in 1991, the statute said if they were totally, permanently disabled, that they could elect an alternative base period. It also provided that the request for an election for an alternative base period had to occur within 3 years of the initial injury.
The initial disability.
Let's go back. Let's talk about this, because our factual scenario is a little different from the straightforward approach you're using. We have a total period of disability. The party is employed to go back to work. They go back to work. Now they have a related but lesser injury. Now they wish to reinstate. So the real question for us is, as we look at initial period of disability, has another period completely ended? Because the doctors told them they've gone back to work, and sometime during this new work period, they've re-injured themselves to a lesser degree. Are we required to say this is part of the initial injury, or is this another injury, just to a lesser degree? It's not quite the same verbiage that we have in workers' comp. This is a different scenario. Or are we, as the question was asked, should we consider it similar to the workers' comp situation, where we would look at it as a remedial?
Well, I think that the problem with this case, Your Honor, is that the facts in the case do not comport with your hypothetical. In this case, Mr. Anderson was injured in 2004. He suffered an injury to two vertebrae and his neck. He, in 2006, was allowed to go back to work, but he was never found to be not disabled. He, in fact, entered into an agreement to receive $777,000 for having a permanent partial disability. He then went back to work for a period of time. He was laid off in 2008, and he then went in and said, my neck is hurting again. Now, the referee...
Pardon me for a moment. He was not able to claim unemployment when he was laid off because he was at that time disabled, correct?
Correct.
So the statute does not say the initial injury, it says the initial period of disability. And I appreciate the plain meaning of the statute, but you also read statutes for context. Mm-hmm. And in this context, wouldn't it be a fair reading that what the statute is designed to accomplish is allowing unemployment benefits to follow a period of disability when they weren't available at that initial disability period because you don't get both unemployment and workers' comp. Do you follow that question?
I do.
And my problem with your argument is, do you make anything of the use of the word period of disability rather than injury?
No, I do. But in this case, there was clearly an initial period of disability. It occurred in 2004. Now, in 1993, the legislature modified the statute. And they did two things when they modified the statute. One, they added partial disabilities as a qualifying factor and rehabilitated services. They also enacted the word initial and put it right in front of period of disability. Now, I cannot conceive of an explanation for the use of that word if it doesn't mean the first, the beginning, the initial period of disability. The initial period of disability in this case is 2004. There's no way that I can say that you can argue that that word doesn't mean what it says. And this court, in I believe it's called the Batchel case, said that if the statute is clear on its face, it has to be read in that manner. And it's up to the legislature to change it if it feels that it is inequitable or shouldn't be applied in that manner. In this case, the initial period of disability was in 2004. I don't think anybody argues about that. And go back to the previous question, we have looked very carefully at what happened in 2008. And there is no evidence, and I think Mr. Olsham will agree with this, that there was any proximate cause, any re-injury, any falling down or picking up a box or anything in the record that would substantiate that another injury occurred in 2008. So we have the injury in 2004, we have the initial period of disability, and then we have another occurrence where the same injury, which everyone acknowledges it's the same injury, worsens later. And we go back and we say, well, let's move the initial period of disability up to a new date. Well, that may be fine, but I don't know what legislative authority we have to do that.
Counsel, we talk in terms of clarity of this particular statute. Do you have a clear definition of initial period of disability? Definition. Where do we find that?
There's two issues there, Your Honor. One is, what does the word initial mean?
And that's my question to you. Where do we
find
that?
It's not defined in statute, but it's certainly defined in Webster's Dictionary. It means the beginning, the first, the primary, the thing that happened first before. There's no way that the 2008 period could be construed as initial in this scenario.
Does that initial period of disability apply to a new disability, or does it relate back to the prior disability?
Well, it isn't a new disability. It's a disability arising from the exact same injury in which this gentleman was rated by the Workers' Comp Administration as being disabled from 2004 onward. He was always disabled. He had chronic partial disability. He had been rated for that for the whole period between 2004 and 2010. He received $77,000 in awards for being disabled, having it from a partial disability. He received $149.27 for 20 years per month as a result of that same injury. There was no period where this individual was not disabled.
Mr. Susich, would your analysis be altered if this court were to define the term disability as incapacity, which is a definitional provision within Blacks, for example?
Well, if the intent was to say that whenever a person becomes unable to work, he is incapacitated, that he has a right to elect an alternative base period. Yes, I would agree with you. But the problem is that's not what it says. And it's the legislature that makes the law.
Excuse me. it would say it if we define disability to refer to incapacity.
Well, but then...
Is the word Justice Douglas asked you about the definition of initial, I'm asking you about the definition of disability.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, you know, your history of decisions in unemployment insurance cases is that you do not get into that business. You do not go in and redefine clear words to say something other than what they say, and that's what I think you're proposing. The legislature certainly can change it if it wants to. They can go to the legislature and request that it be changed to incapacity. But that's not what it says. It says disability, and disability has a very definite meaning. It means, you know, a situation where an individual is injured and is disabled. And as I said, with regard to the definition of disability through workers' comp, Mr. Anderson has never not been disabled since 2004. So ESD is not trying to be unfair to Mr. Anderson. ESD is just simply trying to enforce the law as it's written, as this court has directed us to do.
So you don't, I just picked up on your last sort of train of thought, where you said disability means X and unemployment means Y. Well, if we are here debating the fact that there's some certainty about disability being one thing in unemployment benefits, or that statutory scheme being something else, isn't it therefore something we might look at to define? Disability, that is?
Well, disability is defined within other law within the state of Nevada, and this statute directly relates to that law. It specifically talks about NRS 616 and 617.
So question that being disabled, unable to work, is different than simply not being employed. And that's really the distinction that you're making, correct?
Right. There are two different things there, correct.
So the petitioner in this case is always and forever after disabled.
Well, not necessarily.
Because then you would have to fall back into the example that Mr. Olshan gave, and that means that you could be injured at the beginning of your working career and never, ever be able to qualify again.
The statute does not say that if you have ever been disabled, you may never elect an alternative-based period in the future if you don't do it within 3 years. What it says is you cannot elect it for the same injury that resulted in the initial period of disability unless you have within 3 years. If there was evidence in this case that Mr. Anderson had been injured in 2008, we would give him another period to elect an alternative.
Even if that injury was an exacerbation of the original disability?
If there was a proximately caused event that resulted, that was provable, that caused that injury to become more serious, then I think there's a good argument that he should be allowed to have an alternative grace period. But there's no...
And that brings me to my final question, which is, could you comment on your opposing colleague's argument that the construction of the statute that ESD is putting forward leads to absurd results and therefore should not be given its plain meaning?
I don't agree with him that it leads to absurd results. The facts of these of the way unemployment insurance works is that it gives people that are rendered unemployed through no fault of their own a certain amount of compensation while they are looking for work. In the case of disability benefits, Mr. Anderson received benefits of $150 biweekly for a period of years immediately after the injury. The legislature in 1993 held that if you, as a result of that period of disability, come back into the market within 3 years, you may elect an alternative-based period. The fact is he's beyond statute of limitations. His wage credits, which are created by ESD, are purged after 3 years. There are no wage credits on the books any longer. At that point, he's got to earn wage credits again, and then in order to qualify again, he needs to have an injury occur or a period of disability occur that really allows him to apply under the applicable statute.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May I call the court, David Olshan, with his rebuttal argument. I would just like to address a couple of points and try to rehab my original argument. I think Mr. Susich was arguing that the same injury is in the statute, that proximately caused event, this language is in the statute, it's not in the statute. And I think that the point that the court was raising is that perhaps advances in medicine, in surgery, the reference was made in the brief to Joe Montana. He had a similar injury to Mr. Anderson here. He was able to play pro football. And I think that these advances in society, advances in medicine and science, could possibly create an ambiguity or some unclearness in the statute. And it could also, as pointed out, lead to a result where if you have an injury when you're, let's say, age 20, you work an appreciable amount of time, let's say 20 years, and you have the same injury, it's exacerbated in the future, you would be hamstrung, you would be prevented from applying for unemployment benefits.
Mr. Olshan, is the definition of the word disability in the statute unclear to you?
It's a difficult question because I am trying to be fair and I am trying to be an officer of the court.
Oh, really?
And I think you could read it in a sense that it's not unclear, that it means disability, and the disability reference reverts back to workers' comp law. But I think in several cases, of course, that just because there's a reference to a statute with regard to one issue doesn't mean it's going to be, you're going to refer to it in terms of another without express intent from the legislature. And here we don't have that express intent from the legislature.
If you were to use the definition of disability out of workers' comp, where would that leave you in this statute?
If you use that definition, then Mr. Anderson would not be eligible.
Would not be eligible.
Would not be eligible, right. And that's the problem, is workers' comp is a contractual statute. Under statute, it's contractual. You favor neither the employer or the employee. NLRS Chapter 612 is remedial in nature. It's almost the opposite, where you do favor the worker and try to find that 612 provides benefits to an unemployed, to a worker who's been involuntarily unemployed.
Do you see any unintended consequences that would result from the court publishing an opinion that defines the word disability different than the way disability is used in the workers' comp statute?
I do see a problem if the court defines it differently but provides no guidance. And what I've tried to do here is provide the substantial gainful activity standard as guidance under Social Security law. If the court defines it differently, I would hope that the court has some standard that a referee could use and a judge could use in the future if they're going to try to interpret it and enforce it.
That sounds like engaging in a legislative function, wouldn't you say?
Well, if the statute is unclear, I think the court can come in and interpret it in a remedial nature. And if the court's going to do that, it can't really leave an unclear standard going forward. And so that's where I see the problem. Perhaps some people may view that as legislation. I think really the court is using judicial economy and trying to avoid future issues before the court by setting a standard that is clear to all the parties who are seeking to enforce it.
If you were to author an opinion that credited your position, how would you define initial period of disability in that disposition?
I would say the initial period of disability should look at the disability in terms of what happened prior to the injury. And if somebody was working for a long period of time, then the initial period of disability would be the injury that occurs after working that long period of time. And what we're talking about under Social Security context is 7 months. So if you earn a substantial
In this case, it was $1,010. If you earned that amount for 7 months, then you would, in essence, reset the statute of limitations clock.
I asked Mr. Susich about defining the word as incapacity, and then that would leave the issue to a fact finder rather than establishing a specific 7 month or some other designated period. What do you think about that?
That would resolve the issue. The problem, as I see it, is you would have an appeals referee with the Employment Security Division making that sort of medical analysis. And perhaps they might be ill-suited to make that analysis. What they're very good at is wages and earning history. That's what they do to figure out eligibility under the unemployment system, and they could do that with regard to substantial gainful activity. Seeing nothing further, thank you.
Thank you very much. This case will stand submitted and will be at ease until the lawyers can come forward on the next matter.